Blog Talk Radio.
Look at your alternative talk AM 1150 traffic update for around the town. Well, traffic is ramping up quite nicely on 167 northbound, where it meets the 405 out of those Esther, and over on the east side out of Capola, Renton, and running up into Bellevue. I-5 northbound is heavy from I-90 heading into downtown Seattle. It's actually pushed a little further back around the West Seattle Bridge and the Columbian Way. NBC News Radio, I'm Lisa Taylor. Stocks are in the red at the beginning of a holiday shortened week. The Dow Jones Industrial Average fell more than 560 points in midday trading on inflation worries. Rising bond yields are also weighing on sentiment as both the NASDAQ and S&P are also sharply lower. The debate over voting rights comes to a head in the Senate today, but the end game is uncertain. Senators will start debating two combined bills, but Republicans vow to block a vote on final passage with a Senate filibuster. That requires a 60-vote threshold for passage. 20% of Americans have caught coronavirus since the beginning of the pandemic. That's according to Johns Hopkins University, which puts the number at more than 66.3 million. More than 851,000 have died so far. The Omicron variant caused cases to skyrocket in recent weeks, but there is hope the surge is waning. That's because the number of new cases is down to 717,000 a day. It was more than 1.3 million just a week ago. There's a new TikTok trend that could have devastating consequences, Natalie Rodriguez explains.
Doctors are warning to steer clear of the latest fad, the so-called sleepy or NyQuil chicken trend, where TikTok users concoct their very own chicken dish raised in a cold and flu remedy. Several TikTok videos show folks making this dish, with some using close to a half bottle of the medicine. One, it could lead to food poisoning or worse. Number two, you could overdose on the super concentrated amount of drugs left behind while cooking. So don't do it.
The congregation at Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh is reaching out to support a Texas synagogue that was attacked over the weekend. Rabbi Jeffrey Myers, who survived the deadly 2018 mass shooting at Tree of Life, said yesterday his heart hurts for the members of Congregation Beth Israel in the Dallas area. On Saturday, a gunman held several hostages at the synagogue for hours before being killed by an FBI rescue team. Rabbi Myers says it was difficult to watch history repeat itself, and it's sad that religious leaders must take security training to help keep their members safe. You're listening to the latest on NBC News Radio.
This is a metaphor for your business's journey. Sometimes it feels like the course keeps changing right before your eyes, and in order to maneuver it, you need an expert by your side. That's what Dell Technologies Advisors do. They have the Windows PC and tech solutions you need to help you get out in front and stay ahead of the game. Call an advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL. A start to a simpler experience with Windows 11 Pro.
When you order your Walgreens prescriptions the same day delivery, it's possible you'll experience some side effects. Side effects may include joy that you won't run out of your pills, and disbelief at just how crazy fast the delivery came right to your door. Get your same day prescription refill today on the Walgreens app.
To use same day Rx delivery or 1 to 2 business day delivery, you must be opted into prescription status alerts. It will appear as an option of orders before that store's cutoff time for the day. Certain health plans do not cover participating same day Rx delivery. Check with your health plan for further details. Excludes California.
The views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. This program is sponsored by Dr. Pat Vasily and Transformation Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Law of Attraction, Traction, Quantum Consciousness, Connection, and Creation with my mom, holistic psychotherapist, Corinne Bierfeld. Corinne has worked in private practice for over 20 years and has witnessed miraculous recoveries treating those who've experienced trauma. Trauma stored in the body can subconsciously affect and determine our life experience. When unconscious programs and traumas are accessed and released, negative core beliefs and maladaptive behaviors can be permanently reprogrammed. Dive deeper into the Law of Attraction and go beyond whatever is blocking you from the life you want with Corinne Bierfeld. The Law of Attraction, Traction starts right now.
Welcome, everyone. I love that. I love that intro. I love that. Corinne is joining me here today, Corinne Bierfeld, and that intro really says it all. But what I want to say, and then we're going to get started on a really important topic. You know, when I think about what it's like to work with somebody like Corinne who understands quantum consciousness, but holistic psychotherapy, and brings in energy psychology and a wide range of tools to heal, I'm really struck by the fact that that is so needed in the world we live in. Today, how do we do this? The law of attraction, traction. you know, attracting healthy love. What? Is that like possible?
A lot of people are asking that question, Dr. Pat. It's good to be with you today.
It's great to be with you. And we have to start by addressing the question that you probably address so often with so many people. What are we looking for?
Yeah.
And I think 90% of the time we don't ask that question and we don't know. And then we end up attracting ourselves to something familiar, which
right.
is probably not a good idea. Tell us about this idea of what we're looking for in
a
partner.
I think we're kind of building on the last show, which was, you know, we were talking about how to, if you want to begin the manifesting process, the first step is just creating a very clear vision. And so I thought it would be fun to do the show today on relationships and how to attract healthy relationships, because I've had quite a few clients coming in either looking for that or being frustrated about not being able to find that. It's the new year, you know. So, I was like, that's going to be a fun topic today. We can start with that, on taking some of these principles that we've been talking about in terms of how do we attract what we want into our lives, and let's talk about how to apply them in terms of drawing to us healthy relationships, healthy love, and specifically, I think, in the area of romantic relationships. So when you're talking about this idea of creating a clear vision, the first step then in terms of attracting healthy love when it comes to a romantic relationship would be to take the time to think about what is it that you really want in a partner. So, and that means just like, you know, getting very specific, literally sitting down, taking the time to write out a list of what would be those qualities that you would most want to experience in a relationship with someone. So, you know, whether it's kindness, passion, loyalty, like what are your top values and what are the top most important qualities that you would want to find in someone? Joe Dispenza, who I love, he's a great teacher of mine, going to see him in a week or two, and I can't wait. when he talks about attracting healthy love, he's like, so what you want to do is make a list of all of the qualities that you're looking for in a partner and then become that, which I think those are very wise words, good advice.
Yeah. And what I love about this topic is, it was joking. Benny and I were joking about this the other day or last week or something. And there was that song that came out by the Spice Girls he reminded me of. It was, what do you really, really want? And that is such an important question. And it leads me to this next question for you. Because I grew up in a family where one of the taglines was, and never understood this, could do it in most every area of my life but love. Every area of my life but love.
Yeah.
And my mom would say, negotiate everything and compromise nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is a woman who had her first child at 12 and second child at 13, so as I got older, I really listened to her. And here's what I want to ask you is, how do we help people? How did you, Corrine, help people not compromise on what they want? Because don't we do it? It's kind of like, oh, I really want that. But you know what? I'm not going to really ask for that because I don't think I'm ever going to get it. Help us out with that part of the law of attraction. No.
Reframe that question. So.
Not that you've ever done that. Just say it.
So. The interesting thing about relationships, and what I try to, when I work with my clients, I help to try to help them understand, is attraction, like attracts like, right? So we usually end up in relationships for a reason. And just like I've said in every one of my other videos, so much of the time the reasons are unconscious, which means, you know, we have this, I think, like we're kind of sold this idea of romantic love, which is like, oh, if you meet the right one and you feel you fall in love, you'll just know because you're going to feel so in love, and that means they're the right person, and that works in the honeymoon stage, and then you get into the relationship, and then what ends up happening inevitably are the patterns that we have grown up with a lot of times will emerge, because we tend to be attracted on a subconscious level to what's familiar. So I want to say this is like the downside, but like the part of this that sometimes is difficult for people to understand is a lot of times attraction has more to do with where we are wounded than it does anything else. But the positive part of that, and what I'm always trying to help people understand, is that when you begin to understand that concept, you can then use your relationship as a vehicle to do the work that needs to be done so that you can become healthier and healthier. So again, the paradox is the healthier that you become within yourself, which means the more we're willing to keep looking within to do our own internal work, to heal our traumas from our own upbringing, then the healthier relationship we can attract, obviously. Like, it would just make sense. You're not going to get a really healthy person that's with a really unhealthy person.
I love the way you're talking about this, because you're really getting at what I call the foundational level of the law of attraction. But you're also talking about something that you uniquely talk about, and that is the idea of traction. You know, if we are able, even if we go down the pathway we've gone down a million times before, the same old pattern, if we have the knowledge and the awareness, or work with somebody that can help us have the knowledge and awareness, we can break a pattern. And see, that's where we can build up traction in the law of attraction, to understand that the momentum we build to break a pattern of old is really the pathway to love, freedom, right?
Oh, you said it beautifully.
I read your outline today, show.
So smart.
I mean, don't let people think that I have an original thought.
No, but you just said it was beautiful.
So, you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I completely understand what you're saying.
I look back at my own life, and if it wasn't for a third party coming in and helping me see something, I might as well be wearing really dark glasses.
Yeah.
But that's what you've seen. That's what you've helped people literally look at healthy from all aspects. Today we happen to be talking about love, right?
Today we're talking about love. And I just love the analogy that you just used, that sometimes we get into relationships as though we're wearing the dark glasses. So the dark glasses, what that would be is we get in and there are so many unconscious processes at play that we can't see, that we're not aware of. And so somebody comes to me and they want to attract a relationship, let's say, or they come to me and they're in a relationship and they're having problems in the relationship, what I will say is, okay, what we want to do is look at what's going on for you. So it's always about, you got to like do the 180 turn, because we're so set up in a world that tells us to look outside of ourselves for our happiness, our joy, our gratification. That's what, you know, from the time we're little, right? We're taught to speak with outside ourselves instead of turning within. So if someone comes in and they're looking for a relationship, first thing I want to have them do is say, all right, well, what we want to do is go to those feelings within you that are coming up. What are the feelings that you're having about not being able to attract a healthy relationship? What are you noticing? What is your experience that you're having? And I'll just basically have them turn within, turn into their body. If it's a feeling of loneliness, if it's a feeling of frustration, if it's a feeling of sadness, whatever it is, we'll turn within and try to go to the source of that. Because the whole paradox, and it is a complete and total paradox, which I'm very aware, like we're doing the show on the law of attraction, and I'm basically saying, the more you can get to a place where you feel so happy and healthy and whole and filled up within yourself, the when you're in that state, the less you're going to be coming from this needy place of trying to find a relationship outside of yourself. That's when you're going to attract the most healthiest relationship possible. Because, of course, like when you're happy and, you know, you're in a place where you're feeling good about yourself and your life and you know it, you radiate a certain energy, and that's just going to be naturally attractive.
Yeah.
When you're in a place where you're feeling unhappy or, you know, coming from more of a needy place, that energy is a very different signature.
Right.
So, you know, another way to frame this is just to ask the question, would you date yourself?
Yeah.
You date yourself?
Well, one is the energy of love. The other one is an energy of desperation.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a strong word, but that is actually what you're describing, because we get to the point where when we add up all of the blocks that you just talked about, we go to this place of I'm never going to, dot, dot, dot.
Right.
Right? I mean, I don't think we all walk around saying, some people do, but we don't generally walk around, but we hold that inside of ourselves.
Yeah.
And part of what you're talking about today is having the reflection of that come to the forefront. You know, the reflection of ourselves helps us understand that we do deserve the love of our lives.
Yes.
You know?
Yes, you said that so beautifully. And the way that I have found, like, using that sunglasses analogy is when you can look at your relationships and say, okay, what is this bringing up for me? It's a way to help begin to take the sunglasses off. So we turn our perspective from what's going on with the other person towards ourselves, and we start to look within. And as we begin to heal more and more, then it puts us in a position where we are able to attract, again, the healthier we are, the more we are able to attract a healthier partner to ourselves. And, you know, I had a good teacher say to me one time that friendship is the highest form of lovers. And I love that because,
yeah.
You know, what really, I think we're at the end of the day, really people are looking for is a best friend. But
yeah.
A best friend where there's a deep emotional connection, a physical connection and attraction, you know, ideally a connection where the values match up, spiritual connection. That's what people are really looking for. There's actually a really good book that I was going to recommend because I read it recently. It's called Calling in the One by Catherine Woodward Thomas. She's one that wrote that conscious uncoupling that Gwyneth Paltrow, you know, she did with Chris Martin.
Yeah.
She gets the principles that we're trying to explain here around attraction, that we attract where we're wounded. We tend to recreate our childhood upbringing in our adult relationships if we're not aware that that's what's happening, and how we can begin to heal ourselves and the patterns that we've experienced growing up by using our adult relationships as like the vehicle to access the parts of ourselves that need our attention, to access the traumas that need healed. So the more and more and more that we're willing to do that, again, we start to glow up, we start to become happier, start to just, you know, radiate within ourselves, not needing an external person then to fulfill us. And the more we move to that place, then the paradox again is that's when, you know, so often I've heard that so many times, that that's when the person will show up. Actually, give you an example. I used to, when I was in graduate school for a short time, I worked at a dating service. So I was getting my degree in marriage and family counseling. I also, I don't know if I ever told you this, Dr. Pat, I've been a minister for like 20 years, so I've done tons of weddings, and they used to make fun of me because they would say, you know, what's your business line say? Like, if you're calling to meet a man, press 1. If you're calling for relationship counseling, press 2. If you need someone to marry you, press 3. So when I worked at this dating service, what was so interesting is my job was to like to help people to join and to, you know, explain the memberships. And a lot of times they would come in and they had maybe been looking for a life partner for years, without any luck. And what the dating service was, basically this was like before the days of just complete online apps. So
yeah.
Like an in-person place to go to. There was a library. There were thousands of members. And as people would join and go to go into the library, all of a sudden, like, this whole new world opened up. Like, what? Oh, my gosh. I can just peruse, like, for, you know, thousands of people. And it created such a different energy about them, because all of a sudden they went from, like, the sense of lack to there's an unlimited number of people. There's so many, there's this huge pool that I can, you know, like, draw from. It was very common for people to pay a lot of money to get the membership and then meet someone side of the dating service. That they weren't even a part of the day.
Yeah.
Because they were now, like, in this state where they had kind of, like, moved into a place of, like, I don't need you. I'm not, you know, if you don't work out, next. They were rating at a different energy. And we had story after story of people who would then, after years of looking, find a relationship. And oftentimes it wasn't even through the dating service itself, but just because they changed energetically in their perception of their worth. And because, you know, they started dating and there's all these people and there's a lot of people vying to go out with them, help them increase their self-confidence, and shifting out of there's a lack that I'm never going to find anyone. So, my gosh, you know, the possibilities are endless.
Yeah.
I'll find someone eventually. They would eventually meet someone.
But isn't that really what you teach? For those of you just tuning in, Corinne Bierfeld joining me here today, you're listening to her show, which is The Law of Attraction, Traction. I want to make sure you all know how to get a hold of Corinne, because this is what she does. The best way to go right now is to go to her website, CorinneBierfeld.com, and I'm going to spell it CorinneBierfeld.com. Go to the website. You could also call her.
E-R.
Oh, what did I say? What did I say?
You just left out the R. It's okay.
Oh, my God. BierfeldT. Did I get it right? Okay.
Yeah,
but
it.
They can call you, can't they?
Yeah.
Can people call you? What's the best phone number for people to call?
Well, the office number is 440-892-0452, and I'm extension 11.
That's it. That's my number. There you go. I want to get back to something you said, because what you said was so really important, because it really opens people up for a new freedom, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I love that you described that experience you had working there and what happens energetically to people. That's really the core of the law of attraction.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for years people didn't understand that the law of attraction is an energy entity.
Very much.
I mean, it's a lot of things, but it is an energy entity. So let's talk about this idea of removing roadblocks or blocks, because so often it's scary.
Mm-hmm.
I personally don't recommend you do it alone.
Yeah.
But if you can at least start to peel those layers back in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that basically how we move from despair or even self-loathing into a place of maybe I'm okay?
You so get it, Dr. But you said really summed it up there. I was when I was preparing to do this interview with you today, I really love A Course in Miracles. I don't know. Have you heard of A Course in Miracles?
Oh, I'm taking it. I'm doing it again now.
One of my favorite teachings, and there's a quote in there that says, you know, your job is not to seek for love. Your job is just to remove the barriers within yourself that you placed against love. And that is kind of what you're talking about there. And so, you know, because I do so much trauma work, my experience in working with trauma is it does tend to create, people have been through a lot of trauma, tend to have a lot of self-loathing or can be very self-critical. And really what that's about, what I found, it took me years to really understand this, is at the core of that is we have rejected parts of ourselves, usually from the time we were very little, without even realizing that that's what we've done in order to survive, you know, in the situations that we've grown up with. It was a coping mechanism at the time. But every time we reject a part of ourselves, you can't self-reject and feel and be in a place of complete self-love. It doesn't go together.
Yeah.
So much of the work that I do is in healing trauma is recovering those wounded child parts that need our attention, and being able to go back to bring healing to those parts. Yeah. Every time we can do a layer of work around that, and bring in more healing. It's like we start to come back to ourselves to bring back wholeness and to integrate.
Yeah.
And each time then that leads to a greater level of self-acceptance and a greater level of self-love. And that really is what we're talking about at the very heart of this. As within, so without. As the more we can come from a place of accepting ourselves exactly where we are and loving ourselves exactly where we are and having compassion and grace for ourselves, the more we're able to extend that into the relationships that we're in.
And you know, what you're really talking about too is the ripple effect of this, because I know this show is not about this, but you know, the ripple effect is when you start to move into that space, dependent on drugs and alcohol and food or other addictions. And, you know, there's a reason that in 12-step programs, one of the first things they tell you when you enter the program is no relationship for a year. So any good sponsor will look at somebody and say that. And that's one of the most difficult things for people to do. But yeah. The reason is the way you've explained it.
I feel like we're in such good alignment today. I'm so glad.
Well, we're talking about a work in progress here when it comes to love.
We're still on the same
page. I'm a work in progress.
Yes, because so my definition of addiction is basically any outside thing that we use, whether it's a substance, another person, shopping, food, drugs, sex, whatever, that we use to avoid our own internal pain, our own internal places where we've disowned. So it's really like the child parts that are needing our attention, that are coming up to the surface, that are screaming for us to heal them. And when we use substances or any type of addiction to avoid, the child part doesn't go, that trauma can't be cleared. So the reason they say not to get into relationships is because once you get off of a substance, especially in that first year, that's the time where you have, actually, I think the greatest opportunity a lot of times, like the stuff you've been avoiding using the addiction for so long is going to come bubbling up to the surface. And if you just jump into a relationship, all you're doing is you're just using that relationship as a way, another form of avoidance.
And that's what you're talking about today. I mean, this show and what you're bringing to the table is love and relationship gives us an enormous opportunity to heal.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I've said this before. If we were meant to heal by ourselves, each of us would have been given our own planet.
Okay.
But we're not. So, I mean, thank you for today. I would love to know how people can find out more about this law of attraction, but also about you. And what's your personal message? What would you like to leave us with today?
As far as finding out more about the law of attraction, I know we're getting ready to launch a new website.
Yeah, it's exciting.
So excited about that. That'll be coming soon. Right now, they can go to my website, which is KorenBierfeldt.com, KorenBierfeldt.com. And what's my personal message today? What's coming to me is, again, this whole idea of self-love, that if we take the time to, okay, yes, we want to get clear about what we're looking for in a romantic relationship. And, you know, I think it's wonderful to desire that and to have a clear vision about the qualities that we're looking for to attract in a partner. But ultimately, to bring it home to our relationship with ourselves and healing ourselves and how we can move into the greatest state of being our own source of self-love. That's, to me, at the highest level, that's what we're all looking for, because then we're filled up from within. And at that place also, I think that's when we're most in our state of being connected to source in the highest way.
Yeah. And boy, you said it. And that's where the freedom begins. Thank you, Corinne. Thank you so much for.
Thanks for joining the Law of Attraction Traction with host, my mom, Corinne Burfeld. Tune in every third Tuesday of the month at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern on Transformation Talk Radio and learn how you can heal from the traumas and conditions you thought were impossible. Get inspired to pursue your own healing and growth so that your light shines brighter than ever. To learn more about Corinne and her and the services she provides as holistic psychotherapist, visit her website at KorenBierfeldt.com.
Don't let that herd mentality lead you off a cliff. We support Thinking for Yourself on Alternative Talk 1150.
Have you always known that you're on a soul path? And have you wondered how to gain real insight into the steps along your own unique journey? Welcome everyone, I'm Sarah Main, and thank you for joining me on Damayanti, the show for your soul. I'm so glad to have you along. Damayanti means peace and calm. Damayanti sheds a light for your soul through the wisdom that shines in the universal language of Sanskrit. Damayanti is the show that speaks to your soul, connects with your soul, and enriches your soul. Join me now on Damayanti, the show for your soul, and be inspired and uplifted by the beautiful light of this profound, timeless wisdom. Welcome everyone. Welcome to Damayanti, the show for your soul with me, Sarah May. It's lovely to have you along. Today we're talking about eyes wide open, yet awake or asleep. That's the question. Eyes wide open, yet awake or asleep. This follows on a bit from my previous show on Sanskrit, but we're going to look more precisely at, are we asleep or awake, yet we have our eyes wide open? And this is from Shakespeare. This is a strange repose, to be asleep with eyes wide open, standing, speaking, moving, and yet so fast asleep. It's from The Tempest. This is a strange repose. Repose is sleep. This is a strange repose or rest, to be asleep with eyes wide open, standing, speaking, moving, and yet so fast asleep. So, here's a question. Are we asleep with eyes wide open? Like right now, are we asleep with eyes wide open? In Sanskrit, the word for conscious is chetana, chetana. And it comes from the root form chit. This is all spelled out in my book, actually. If you go to my book, Conscious Confidence, Use the Wisdom of Sanskrit to Find Clarity and Success. It's described, it's in chapter 3, actually, and it's about being conscious and unconscious. So chetana in Sanskrit, that word means to be visible, sentient, intelligent, percipient. That's not a word we use very often in English these days, percipient, understanding, perceptive. Having sense, consciousness, and insight, an intelligent being. So that's all to do with chetana, being conscious. And it comes from chit, this root form chit, which means to perceive, observe, attend, understand, comprehend. All right, all of those sorts of meanings. So the word chetana is derived from that root form, like a seed, like a tree coming from a seed. The word chetana grows from that root form chit. Okay. So we can nod our heads and say, yes, sure, Sarah, why? What's your point? We can nod our heads and think we're awake and take all this information for granted. We can assume we're awake. We can assume we're aware. I mean, we don't walk into trees. We don't fall into holes in the road, mostly. We don't walk into lampposts, do we? So we can assume a level of awareness. But I'm going back to Shakespeare. This is a strange repose, to be asleep with eyes wide open, standing, speaking, moving, and yet so fast asleep. What on earth could he mean? And it's not just Shakespeare. This is something that's talked about in many philosophies and scriptures and all sorts of things. So awareness of the physical world and being truly conscious encompasses all levels of awareness. So awareness of the physical world, the mental world, the emotional world and the spiritual world, it's like a 360 degree awareness at once. All that awareness is there, and yet one will be in the forefront of the attention and the others will be just in the background, and then the attention will be on something else. So if we sit down and close our eyes, we're less aware of the physical world. If we're walking around, we're more aware of the physical world. And yet when we're walking around, we can still be aware of the mental world, the emotional world, and spiritual world. And I'm just dividing these up for the purposes of explaining this. Whereas when we're, say, eyes closed, being still, meditating in prayer, we're not so aware of the physical, but we are connected with other worlds. All right, so 360-degree awareness. So if we're caught up in one of these worlds, like when I mean caught up, it means to the exclusion of the others, in our, and let's say particularly in our mental and emotional stories and experiences from the past, for example, we're not awake and aware of the full picture. We're not really, truly conscious. So in terms of what the scriptures say and in terms of what Shakespeare's referring to, when we're caught up like this, we are effectively asleep because we're unconscious. All right? Here's a story. There was a camel driver, and he was the best camel driver in a wealthy city. The merchants hired him to carry their wares to far-flung markets. And the camel driver hired a new apprentice as an assistant, and he started training him. And he trained him in all the tasks that he needed to do, like loading the bundles, feeding and watering the camels, finding shade, resting, you know, finding shade and resting places along the route when they were travelling. And the apprentice learned all these new skills really quickly. The camel driver was so impressed with the diligence and attention to detail of his new assistant. So the camel driver asked the apprentice if there was anything he wanted to know. And the apprentice asked, "When we stop for the night, all the other camel drivers spend time securing their camels with ropes and leads to posts and rails, so that they don't wander off overnight. But all you do is just run your hand around the neck of the camel and they just remain all night where you've left them. Is this some sort of magic that you put them under? Is there a spell? What have you cast on these animals? Because there's no ropes, physical ropes actually holding them, but they just stand there." And the camel driver laughed and he said nothing. A few days later, the camel driver and the apprentice went to purchase a new camel. And then each night, the camel driver would tie up the new camel, and he also passed his hand around the neck of this camel. After a few weeks, the camel driver stopped tying up the camel with a rope and just continued to pass his hand around the neck, miming the action of tying up. The camel stayed in place all night, just like the rest of them. The astute and observant apprentice understood. He said, "Now I see. This creature, although free, believes itself to be bound and acts accordingly." The master smiled and nodded to his assistant. So, how about that story? How does this relate to our level of awareness and wakefulness? What are we binding ourselves with each day and believing that we're bound when we're actually free? Now, in the previous show, I was talking about limited self-talk, that we literally speak ourselves into existence. So the limited self-talk, are we speaking ourselves into bondage, into limitation? Are we thinking ourselves into bondage and limitation, just like that camel driver had trained his camels to believe that they were bound, even though they weren't? And we can bind ourselves just by carrying around these stories and narratives and experiences from the past. We can walk around thinking that we're bound, and we're not. These things are from the past, and we just need to be ready to let go. My teacher used to stand there and say, "The difference is this to this." And I'm clenching, if you're listening as a podcast, this is a clenched, tightly clenched fist, and then just completely releasing it and opening the hands and the fingers and relaxing. That's the difference between bondage and freedom. So do we realize that we're asleep in a form of waking sleep? when we're caught up in this. So one of the chief reasons for looking into the Sanskrit meanings and key concepts and ideas and words and topics is to shine the light of truth and reason on these limits that we often carry around inadvertently. They're unconscious. We don't know we've got them. And they colour our thoughts and our feelings. They actually have an influence. They have an effect. We literally speak ourselves into existence. And we carry these limits around unconsciously, and they have an effect. Think of the story of the camel. And we just believe them unconsciously that we're bound and we're actually free. Those camels, if they woke up, could walk away, but they don't. So Sanskrit is pure and perfectly formed. So the wisdom is pure and perfectly formed, and it has the power. Sanskrit is the language of the universe. It has the power to shine a light, to light up where the limits are, because it's in the light of the universality of the wisdom that we suddenly think, oh, I think one thing, but Sanskrit's saying this. And you realize, you actually experience this limit. And in my previous show, I talked about this example that I had at a spiritual retreat of the word all, A-double-L. I was studying it in Sanskrit. We had a study session at the retreat. And I looked up the Sanskrit word all, which is sarva or sarva, different ways of pronouncing it, and read this long, long list of English meanings for this one simple little Sanskrit word, all, sarva. And I realized in the light of this, the fullness, because I gave my full attention to it, the fullness of this description of all, that I unconsciously just had this limit around when I used the word all, there was this limited, and it was unconscious, that it meant a lot, but it didn't mean everything. And in Sanskrit, when Sanskrit says all, it means everything, every nook, every cranny, everything, every great thing, every small thing. All means all. It doesn't mean a lot, it means all. And it was like, it just hit me that I carried around this unconscious limitation on my understanding, and that has an effect on how we speak, move, act, and understand and perceive and experience the world and literally speak ourselves into existence. So that's just one simple example of the power of Sanskrit to highlight where the limits are, and cleaning up these meanings that we carry around, these limited meanings, means our daily experience and life can transform. And we can step free because we are free. We are naturally free. We are free, sovereign, infinite, limitless beings. The wisdom traditions keep saying this. So our thoughts and beliefs can limit us, but we are in fact free. And that's why I go back to the Sanskrit, because it helps us to wake up so that we don't walk around with eyes wide open and yet so fast asleep. We're actually awake, and we raise our awareness. And people talk about raising awareness. Well, this is one way, is to see the unconscious limits that we carry around. We're going to take a break now, and after the break, I'm going to talk about tearing up our sleep by the roots. Tearing up our sleep by the roots. So we'll see you after the break. Welcome back, everyone. Welcome back to today's show on Dharma Yanti, the show for your soul. And today we're talking about eyes wide open, yet awake or asleep. That's a question. And we're going to move on to tearing up our sleep by the roots. Tear up your sleep by the roots. And that actually comes from, well, it's a translation, but it comes from Rumi. Some of you may have heard of Rumi. He was a 13th century Persian poet. So obviously he wasn't speaking and writing in English, but this is a translation, and it's just the final section of a part of a poem. And it says, "But you, if you are wise, will tear up your sleep by the roots. like a thirsty man who has heard the sound of running water. But you, if you are wise, you will tear up your sleep by the roots, like a thirsty man who has heard the sound of running water. That's Rumi, a 13th century Persian poet. So he was addressing this topic then. And Shakespeare, of course, this is a strange repose. What does he say? This is a strange repose, to be asleep, with eyes wide open, standing, speaking, moving, and yet so fast asleep. That's from The Tempest. And Rumi says, but you, if you are wise, will tear up your sleep by the roots, like a thirsty man who has heard the sound of running water. It's the urgency and that strength in the sound. So now we're going to talk about tearing up the sleep by the roots, this unconscious state of awareness where we walk around sort of in a waking sleep, basically, because we're caught up in our thoughts and feelings and narratives and stories from the past. And we needn't. Think of the camel story. We needn't be bound like those camels standing overnight with nothing holding them. They're actually free, but they believe themselves to be bound. So we need to stop believing ourselves to be bound. Now I'm going to take a little detour away from Sanskrit and go on to a very, very famous allegory, and it's by from Plato. Plato's allegory of the cave, and Plato is an ancient Greek philosopher, you know, of Socrates. And Plato actually sort of wrote down what Socrates was saying. Socrates had these dialogues where he discussed philosophy, and Plato wrote them down. So it's Plato's allegory of the cave, and it's really Socrates speaking. And this is a very famous image, and it's talking about the journey of awakening, and you can relate it to the journey of the soul, moving from darkness to light. So this is the journey of awakening, and it's done through this image, this allegory of the cave. So it starts with, imagine prisoners in a dark underground cave. The neck and the ankles of each prisoner are shackled. So they're tied up with shackles by the neck and the ankles. So they can't move. They can't get up. They can't move. All they can do is turn their heads a bit. The prisoners have been there since birth in this underground cave. It's dark. They can't turn around, so they can only look directly forward at the back wall of the cave. Got that image? And they don't know anything else except this. They're there from birth. There's a blazing fire above and behind them. So above and behind the prisoners, is a blazing fire. It throws shadows of the prisoners on the back wall. So they're looking at their own shadows without knowing it. They don't know that those shadows are shadows of themselves. Then between the fire and the prisoners, there's a raised walkway with a screen along its length. And there are people walking up and down this walkway carrying cut-out shapes of various objects, everyday objects, animals, trees, buildings, all sorts of things, right? So they're carrying these cut-out shapes, right? And they're going up and down the walkway. And remember, there's a screen and the fire. So what does this do? It projects shadows of these shapes, these cut-out shapes, onto the back wall. And these shape carriers often comment and chat as they do their work. They're just doing what they're told to do. That's their job. And so you have these projected, because of the fire, these shadows of all these shapes, so shadows of the trees and the animals and the buildings and whatever, being cast on the back wall of the cave. And the sound of these shape carriers, we'll call them shape carriers, these shape carriers also bounces off, echoes off the back wall. So the prisoners hear these voices and sounds echoing off the back wall and think that their shadows are actually speaking and making noises and sounds. The prisoners, it's their life. They discuss the order and the shape and the sounds of these shadows, and they congratulate each other and award each other for knowing what's coming next. Now imagine, okay, so let that image of this allegory set in. Prisoners bound, back of the cave, they're looking at the back wall, they're shackled, Venus since birth. You've got the fire, the shape, the shadows being cast, and their sounds, and they think these shadows are real, and they think they've got, they hear the sounds, and they think the shadows talk or make sounds, and they congratulate themselves, and that is their whole world, right? So now imagine one day someone walking past enters the cave. And this is an important point now. Someone enters the cave, and there's now at the entrance of the cave is up a steep walkway, and then there is some diffused light coming in from the sun and the sunlight and the natural light coming in. And someone sees this walkway, looks in, sees and starts walking down into the cave. And sees the scene for what it is, sees the prisoners, the fire, actually sees the reality of the scene. And he goes naturally out of compassion, it's a natural instinct, and walks all the way down past the fire to the prisoners, right down in the dark, and frees one of them, right? And helps this person who's never stood up before, helps them stand up. And shows him the shadows, right? And then he turns him around slowly, and of course he's turning around slowly to the light that's being cast by the fire. And at first this is blinding light, so he has to sort of close his eyes and slowly allow his eyes to adjust to the light of just the fire. And his legs are weak, and he slowly encourages him and helps him past the fire and up this steep walkway. So it's an ascending walkway, and he ascends up towards the light that's coming in at the opening of the cave. And the walkway is steep, it's difficult, it's uneven, and he's assisted by the liberator, but the liberator can't make him walk, doesn't carry him. He has to walk, the freed prisoner has to walk there himself. And at first he gets to the opening, and at first he's so pained by the light outside he has to look down. And the only thing he can see is the shadows cast on the ground of the trees and the animals and things. But these are shadows cast by sunlight, not by a light. You know, we'll call that artificial light. This is sunlight casting shadows. And that's all he can see at the moment because his eyes can't take the actual light. And eventually he adjusts to that, and then he can see reflections in pools of water and on polish. He can see reflections that are more real. They've got colour in them now. Imagine looking at the surface of a still lake and seeing a tree reflected, as a still lake can do, reflect perfectly like a mirror. And he can now see that, right? And that's amazing because he can actually perceive colour. And then he can see objects in moonlight, and then eventually he can see everything in the sunlight, and finally he can see the sun himself. So this freed prisoner thinks of his, and then this freed prisoner now sees reality. And he then thinks of his fellow prisoners trapped in the dark and false scene underground, and he has a natural desire to go and free them. He doesn't want to experience that anymore. He has no desire for that because he's seen the light of reality, but he, out of compassion, wants to free his fellow prisoners. So he goes back into the cave, and at first the darkness blinds him because he's used to the light. So he's blinded by the darkness again, so he's cast back into darkness. And it's described in detail, but actually he goes to free and the prisoners are confused and unsettled by what he says, because he's actually blinded by the darkness, and the prisoners say, look what's happened to him. He went up to this other place and he's returned blind, and he's ignorant of all this knowledge that we have of what's going on here, of what we see, our reality. He's ignorant of all of this. He has no desire for the awards that we're offering, and he's blind, he can't see. And Plato describes it, that if he were to free them, they would turn on him and try and kill him, rend him, as he describes it. They would, you know, they would see this free person as a threat if they're still absolutely trapped in this unreal dark world. And they could turn on him out of fear, and because they would think that they would be rendered blind and ignorant like him. So this story is very famous and it's very powerful, because it's talking about the stages of the soul's journey from darkness to light, from bondage to freedom, from being asleep to being awake, from being limited to expressing your full potential. But it does contain a warning to take care when seeking to free others before they're ready, and I'll talk about that later. So you can only attend to your own awakening, really. So we need to be careful and attend to our own awakening first, and be aware, awake and aware for when people ask questions of us, because that's the sign that they're interested and open. You can't just go and shake someone awake in this regard, because think of those prisoners down in the cave. And these great teachers like Plato understood human nature and laid that all out for us, for our learning, for our understanding. So if you want to find out more, if you want to find out more about how to wake up, go to my website, damayanti.store. That's D-A-M-A-Y-A-N-T-I, damayanti.store. There's beautiful products. There's my book. There's all sorts of things to learn and read. There's my blog, and there's good articles there. And my next show is on the Seven Steps to Freedom. And I've got a special guest, the author of the book, Seven Steps to Freedom. And this links to the allegory of the cave, because that steep pathway that the prisoner first walked up is actually covered in Seven Steps to Freedom. There are seven steps to that pathway. And this book goes through, in a very accessible and beautiful way, the wisdom tradition's outline of the seven steps to walking that soul path. I'm going to finish with a beautiful peace prayer from the Yajur Veda in Sanskrit. In heaven, peace, peace in the space between, on earth, peace, on the waters, peace, in plants, peace, in trees, peace, peace in all powers, in spirit, peace, peace in everything, peace alone, peace, 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 peace. Om Ya Shanti Antariksham Shanti Prithivi Shanti Apa Shanti O Shadhaya Shanti Vanaspataya Shanti Vishve Deva Shanti Brahma Shanti Sarvam Shanti Shanti Reva Shanti Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Thank you for spending time with me on Damayanti, the show for your soul. To find out more about Damayanti, or to get my book, Conscious Confidence, Use the Wisdom of Sanskrit to Find Clarity and Success, or to purchase my range of beautiful spiritual jewelry, go to my website, damayanti.store. That's damayanti.store. damayanti.store. See you next time.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. Contests are the responsibility of the host of this program, and not KKNW. This is Alternative Talk 1150 AM, KKNW Seattle, and KNUC 98.9 HD3 Seattle.
And good Tuesday to you, Ben Mather. Here for a look at your Alternative Talk AM 1150 traffic update for around this hour over on I-5 northbound. near the on-ramp from northeast 70th Street. There's a recent collision partially blocking that ramp. Current backup now is about 2 miles to bring a patient phone with you there. Good thing, though, medical aid fire systems and response team, along with state patrol, have all arrived on the scene, and they are taking care of that collision. Stay tuned. Coming up next, after the news weather, it's another hour of the Transformation Talk Radio Network. This time is Coffee with the Universe and Laura Goldstein.
News Radio, I'm Lisa Taylor. Free at-home COVID-19 tests are available starting today. Residential households in the U.S. can order one set of four rapid antigen COVID-19 tests at covidtests.gov. There's a limit of one order per address, and they start shipping out in late January. The CDC recommends testing 5 days after exposure to COVID-19 or as soon as symptoms occur. The COVID surge isn't budging just yet. Cases haven't peaked for most of the nation, with the average at a record of nearly 800,000 infections a day.
I think what happened that no one could have predicted was how quickly the Omicron variant spread.
Dr. Trudy Hall is the vice president at University of Maryland Capital Region Health. Some areas in the Northeast are seeing their case rates slowly drop. In D.C., it's down 25%, while Vermont is almost 22%. New York City and New Jersey also report a 17% drop over the last week. But other parts of the country are getting slammed. North Kansas City, Missouri had 300 teachers out on Friday due to COVID. Health experts warn the Omicron variant may not be the last of the pandemic. The Senate Majority Leader says the nation will be watching as the Senate begins debating voting rights legislation. New York Democrat Chuck Schumer said the first steps are being taken as debate starts, and he called out Senate Republicans for opposing the bill.
Just a few days removed from what would have been Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s 93rd birthday, the Senate has begun the debate on the Freedom to Vote Act and the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act.
Schumer said it's the Senate's duty to discuss and move forward with voting rights legislation because the American public deserves it. He added the fight for voting rights has been happening since the birth of the U.S., and while progress has been made, there's still room for more inclusion. AT&T is delaying the launch of 5G near some airports after airlines asked the Biden administration to intervene. The wireless company will work with the aviation industry and the FAA to gather further information. You're listening to the latest on NBC News Radio.
This is a metaphor for your business's journey. Sometimes it feels like the course keeps changing right before your eyes. And in order to maneuver it, you need an expert by your side. That's what Dell Technologies Advisors do. They have the Windows PC and tech solutions you need to help you get out in front and stay ahead of the game. Call an advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL. A start to a simpler experience with Windows 11 Pro.
When you order your Walgreens prescriptions with same-day delivery, it's possible you'll experience some side effects. Side effects may include joy that you won't run out of your pills and disbelief at just how crazy fast the delivery came right to your door. Get your same-day prescription refill today on the Walgreens app.
To use same-day ARC delivery or 1-2 business day delivery, you must be added as a prescription status alert. It will appear as an option if orders before that source cutoff time for the day. Certain health plans do not cover participating same-day ARC delivery. Check with your health plan for further details. Excludes California.
The views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. This program is sponsored by Dr. Pat Vasily and Transformation Talk Radio.
How do you start your day? Are you focused, energized, and tuned in to your higher self? Or do you wake up anxious, unmotivated, and already overwhelmed by your giant to-do list? Welcome to Coffee with the Universe with Laura Goldstein, where we'll have inspiring and practical conversations around how to reverse daily struggle and show up calm, collected, and confident instead. As a psychotherapist, spiritual advisor, yoga teacher, and influential speaker, Laura will discuss all things morning routine for increased productivity, mental clarity, greater connection with self, and better decision making. So grab your favorite cup of joe and come sit down with Laura. Coffee with the Universe starts now.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of Coffee with the Universe, where we're going to be talking about setting goals and resolutions. It is January 2022, and usually in January, people are often running with their new list of resolutions, clinging to them, so excited to actually, you know, do them and achieve them. But we all know what happens with this. Soon comes February and then March, and most people have fallen off the wagon. And then by summer, you know, most of these resolutions are in the dust. So I want to talk today a little bit about goals and resolutions. Do they lead us farther away from our spiritual nature, from us developing as spiritual beings? Because we are human beings, yes, human beings doing, but we are also spiritual beings. And we are an achievement-driven society. Many people take pride in having a lofty list of goals to accomplish and actually accomplishing them. It's almost like the more you accomplish, the more successful you appear. Wow, look at everything that this person has achieved in their life. So, you know, we have this drive to achieve, but that really comes from the ego. And here's my question. Does your soul, who you are at soul level, actually care about achieving goals? Is that how at soul level you measure your abundance and being in your dharmic flow, which is just really your sense of purpose? Or, you know, are we getting in our own way of evolving and growing by setting goals and having such a targeted focus on achievement? I don't know. These are all good questions. I was just talking with my producer, Jacob, here before he got on, and I was like, I love talking about goals, but I hate setting them. It's like, you know, I enjoy this topic because I think that this time of year, it's exciting. I mean, who doesn't love to get like a new planner? I don't know, Jacob, I don't know if you like to love getting a new planner and journal for the new year.
I typically keep the goals in my head, but my wife loves to use a planner. I'm just not quite there yet.
Well, I mean, some of us are planner people and some of us aren't. I am. I love planners and journals, so I love, you know, getting a new one. But there's usually like a section that's like, okay, write down your three-month goals and five-month goals. And do you know, I always fill that sucker out, and then, like, 3 months later, my goals have completely changed, and whatever I wrote down is like, completely irrelevant.
It reminds me of, like, when I would start a new school year in high school or college, and I'd get the planner, I'd be all like, super excited to fill it out and write everything that I have to do down, and then I lose it in my backpack or desk. Like, and I find it like 6 months later, and it's like, oh, okay, I didn't really even look at this.
They're like, well, I had it, but it wasn't very useful.
Yeah.
I do think, I mean, if you think about why do we set goals, there is really a practical purpose to goal setting. I mean, it really does help us. So let's look at this from a practical human doing perspective. We really do need some kind of goal focus. It helps us to maintain that sense of consistency so we aren't just like aimlessly wandering through life. You know, we all want to have a sense of purpose and accomplishment. And I do think that at soul level, there is a desire. I mean, there's this desire to be in your dharma. Dharma is a yogic term, and basically just means to be in your flow, in your purpose. So we're not talking about, you know, goal and purpose here. It's like, oh, that's your job, but more like feeling purposeful, like we are actually growing and evolving and accomplishing something. So goals do help us maintain a sense of focus, so we're not just like lost. And if we never had really any goals, I think that we would probably end up feeling depressed, listless, you know, I just don't have anything to look forward to. So there is a practical purpose. It also helps us to assess what is important in life. I believe that when we set goals, if we continue to work towards those goals, we obviously value it for some reason. Sometimes we set goals like I talk about, and then like 3 months later, I'm like, oh, yeah, I set that goal, but I don't really care anymore. Apparently, it wasn't really something that I valued. It's a really good way to do like a checks and balances kind of system, like what is important in life? What is important enough for me to purposefully continue and take action versus what is it that I am wanting to do but maybe isn't really congruent to my values, to what I really say I want for myself because I'm not really making any effort to accomplish it. And I'll give you a good example. So I have been writing this book about my adventure in Alaska since I left Alaska, and that was like 2013. And I have started and stopped and rewritten and changed my focus. And then I just stopped writing. And, you know, this was a goal. Oh, I'm going to be a published author. And I really had to decide, you know, why is it that I want to achieve this? Why do I have this goal? And part of it was these, I guess like marketing experts were telling me, oh, it'll be really good for your business. When you have a book, you have a platform for speaking. And since I love to speak, I was like, oh, that's what I need, a platform for speaking. So I've had this goal to finish this book for a very long time, like a decade pretty much. And I just haven't done the work to complete it. And I had this aha moment that trying to write this book in order to make it a way that I think other people want or how it should look for marketing purposes only wasn't in alignment with my soul's self-expression of just sharing my experiences. I thought I had to turn it into like this self-help book. So I took all my chapters and I made it like this life lesson of telling people like what they should be doing based on what I learned. And there just really wasn't that sense of alignment for me. And setting this goal based on the underlying factor of why I should be reaching this goal really, I think, just distracted me from expressing myself to just being authentic and a story wanted to share regardless of what people think of it or how it should be in order to, you know, get me more speaking gigs. So while our goals help us focus and to not like wander aimlessly and you know, kind of push us maybe outside of our comfort zone so that we do continue to grow, we can go wrong in many different ways, and one of them again is setting goals but not really being invested in those goals. So I guess my question to you out there is, what are some of the goals or resolutions or even intentions, it doesn't really matter what you call them, what are some that you've set for yourself for this year that maybe is somebody else's goal? It belongs to, you know, maybe it could be a parent. I mean, sometimes we assume the goals of our parents. I know I did. I became a school teacher because my dad was an entrepreneur, and he would tell me, oh, don't work for yourself. It's really hard work, and you don't have a steady paycheck, and go do something with the government. And my mom taught school for a little bit, although she didn't continue. She ended up helping my dad in his business. And I took on this goal of being a school teacher, and you know what? I hated it. I started like in second grade, and these kids are like snotting everywhere, and so-and-so's touching me, and they're whining, and I'm thinking, why exactly am I doing this? I'm like, maybe I need older kids. But the whole point was is I took on this goal and went and got an elementary ed degree for something I didn't really want to do. It really wasn't my goal. It was for my parents. And we do this, we sometimes take on goals of other people because we feel like we need to please them. I guess in my case, early wasn't sure what I wanted to do anyway, so I thought, well, how hard is it to get an elementary ed degree? And to be honest, it wasn't very hard. I didn't really have to rack my brain a whole lot. The hard work was in actually teaching after the degree was over and they throw you in a classroom and you have all these kids screaming at you. That was the hard part. But, you know, it goes wrong when we take on these intentions and these resolutions that aren't ours. Another place it goes wrong is when we have this idea that we can only, you know, do our goals once a year. I have learned that who I am at soul level, what my soul prefers, is to be a little bit more free-flowing in my goals and not be like, okay, here is my once a year, which is why, like, a lot of these planners didn't work for me. Even, like, the Monk Manual, which I have raved about on this show before, and the Monk Manual, you can get, it's something that you can download from the site where you evaluate your life and you kind of look at where you are and how do you see yourself in 3 years, how do you see yourself in 5 years. A lot of planning entities do that. Like, what is your five-year project? Where do you see yourself? And I'm like, you know, I don't even know what I'm going to wear tomorrow, much less what 5 years down the road is going to look like. That's really hard for me to do. And I feel like if I'm trying to set goals and resolutions based on, like, this five-year projection, like, I feel so stunted. I'm like, I don't even know where to begin. You know, I don't know. Does that work for anybody, Jacob? Does that work for you, like, setting, like, these long-term goals?
I think, in theory, they set me up for the direction I generally want to go, but what doesn't happen for me is the tangible, like, day-to-day change that I would expect from a goal like that. I was talking to Rachel, my wife, about, you know, where do we want to be in 5 years? And it was so abstract and, like, off in the distance that it wasn't specific enough that it was actually going to change what I was doing that week or that month or, you know, it didn't feel like a drastic change to me. So for me, that's not how I prefer to do it. But I know for some people, they need to have that kind of, you know, overhead view and umbrella view of where they're trying to get so that they can start to set those smaller goals.
Yeah, I guess it really depends. I mean, I know from the work that I do with people, when I do a soul level reading and I'm teaching somebody about who they are at soul level, there is variances in how we manifest what we want to create. And some of us are strong outcome people and some of us are process people. And it's really helpful for me to learn that I was much better at focusing on the process, which is what you're talking about, Jacob, that day-to-day change. You know, okay, I kind of know what direction I want to go in, but what drives me most, what supports me the most is daily taking, you know, this action, steady action towards what I want to create, but yet being involved in that action. But there are outcome people who really focus on the big picture and just automatically adapt their lifestyle to that. And so I think, I mean, maybe too, Jacob, you're a process person because, like, I'm like you. It's like I know this abstract, but I, you know, my daily life isn't changing unless I make an intention. How do I want my days to be versus, you know, here's the outcome, what I'm going to do. I mean, there's like a slight nuance to it, but I think it makes a difference in our motivation.
Yeah, for me, it actually kind of goes back to one of the past shows that we did about those daily routines and, you know, how that sets you up for not just your day, but, you know, your week and your month. For me, the way that I need to set these goals is that if I can kind of rein in that abstract overhead view of it and bring it down into how do these small things that affect my day-to-day set me up to eventually get to this, you know, big goal that I've set for 5 years down the road. And I found that to be a lot more successful for me because it's a little more intentional for me, daily intention versus, you know, I hope I get there and doing these things should get me there versus I can see the progress happening every single day and I know that that's going to put me in a place where I am ready to reach that goal.
Yeah, it's almost like creating a lifestyle for yourself versus a goal. And as spiritual beings, we want to, like, our souls want us to, you know, explore and experience humanity and express ourselves and experience, you know, gratitude and joy. But I think in order to do that, you almost have to create a lifestyle for yourself, which is kind of what you were saying. And I know we need to take a break, but I came across when I was doing some research, I came across this someone who asked the question about setting goals in a relationship to suffering, because in like Buddhist philosophy, you know, to desire something is to suffer. And that makes sense, because if we really want something, there's this like anxious anticipation of trying to get it, trying to get it, trying to reach it, trying to get there. It's like an obsession in a way. And it does create this discord on the inside. And so they're having a written conversation, and they're talking about the problem with setting goals is that we look so much in the future. Instead of creating like day now, how can I, you know, incorporate what my soul wants for me today, right now? We are like, oh, in the future, I want this. But that always leaves us projecting ourselves into the future. And from a spiritual perspective, the only thing that really matters is the here and now. The past doesn't exist. The future doesn't exist. So when we create a lifestyle and we focus on every day of just, you know, harnessing our divine nature, then we're never lacking, because, oh, in the future, I'm going to lose 20 pounds. Oh, in 3 months, I'm going to be thinner. So I just thought it was really interesting about that distinction of lifestyle, because we're working in the present moment instead of trying to achieve something that we sense is, you know, going to happen for us, you know, 6 months down the road or even 5 years down the road. Okay, I know we need to take a break, so let's do that. And when we come back, we will continue the discussion on goals, maybe a little about where did we go wrong, and what does it mean to be a spiritual being. So I will see you shortly. Have you heard about shifting the collective vibration and consciousness on the planet? Join me, Kimberly Barrett, on the Sharing Love and Light show every first and third Tuesday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern at TransformationTalkRadio.com to explore the depth of vibration and consciousness on our planet and learn how you can shine your love and light. To learn more, visit SharingLoveAndLightShow.com.
Healing has a ripple effect. One person's healing affects everyone around them. This is where the power of sharing our stories can be so important. Tune in to Playing on the Edge Radio with Megan Edge each month on Transformation Talk Radio as Megan provides you with ways of sustaining radical and powerful changes in your life. Enact the power of radical change. To find out more about Megan Edge, visit her website at meganedge.ca.
The truth is funny. Shift happens with monthly guest host Karen Benton. Tune in for powerful conversations about health and wellness. Karen brings unique insights rich with humor and science to her discussions with experts in medicine, movement, psychology, spirituality, and so much more. Don't miss Karen on The Truth is Funny every third Wednesday at 8 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more information about Karen, visit KarenBenton.com.
Who taught you or your kids how to handle stress? That's right, no one. I'm combat veteran Deb Lewis, and I'm on a mission to change that. My new children's book, Why is Pono Not Pono Today, is set in Hawaii. Lovable characters, Pono the Bull and his friend Kuleana, show us how a stressful situation ends happily. Look closer to reveal powerful ways to handle all types of stress. Start loving your stress-filled life today. Go to MentallyToughWomen.com.
Sometimes being human has its challenges. Our physical health falters, our spirits sag, our dreams don't immediately come to fruition. Welcome to the power of Maximum Medicine Radio. Join me, Doc Martin, in conversations that will blow your mind about healing. In our hit show, Doc Martin addresses the scientific with bridging to the mystical approaches to give you a new narrative about Maximum Medicine. In this live call-in show, we will journey into the extraordinary genius of the human body and talk about other beliefs that impact being your multidimensional self. We seek the seen and the unseen and explore the earthbound and the otherworldly, all with the purpose of calling forth the maximum you. To learn more about Doc Martin and Maximum Medicine, visit www.SharonMartinMD.com.
To Coffee with the Universe. Today we're talking about setting goals and resolutions. Do they help us or do they actually distract us from developing and growing as spiritual beings? Does our soul even care about setting goals, resolutions, even intentions and achievement? Do we really care? So in the first segment, we chatted a little bit about the goals and the drive and where we can go wrong. And I just want to touch on a little more areas where this is where goal setting doesn't work for us. So if you've set goals and you haven't accomplished them, then one of these reasons is probably where you have kind of gone off track a little bit. So first, it may not be how you are designed. We sometimes set goals based on what we see other people doing. And Jacob and I were just talking about the differences between people and like jobs. And I was thinking, I don't know how someone can like sell used tires and just really be there for the money, because like if I don't love what I'm engaged with and involved with, I don't want to do it. I would dread my work. But maybe it's about loving the sales process and just, you know, that challenge of can I, you know, convert this customer. But, you know, that's two ways of operating that are very different. One is very outcome oriented. And for me, it's very what am I doing process oriented. So we need to know how we are designed. Also, when we attach personal worth to whether we achieve our goals, this is where we get some, I guess I could say, spiritual blockages, because we have identified our divinity, our self-worth, with whether or not I made, you know, $100,000 this year. As divine beings, we are worthy just because we're divine beings. We don't need to prove ourselves, get anything, gain anything, have a particular degree or a particular job. We are worthy just as we are. So when we attach worth to something externally, to this achievement, I became the CEO, I've worked my way up the corporate ladder, that our soul doesn't really care about that, because our soul knows that we don't need that in order to be beautiful and worthy and perfect. So are you attaching your self-worth to goals? And sometimes this happens a lot in like the health industry, like with weight. People don't see themselves as worthy because of how their body is, extra weight that they've put on, or maybe weight that they didn't take off after pregnancy or whatnot. But, you know, the soul doesn't care how we look, because it's not about that. Our physical body is just a tool to help us explore the world and experience life. It's not about the body. So are you attaching any worth to your goals? And our goals that are created from the ego really sound like, oh, I should be doing this. Oh, it would really look good if I did that, or if I do this, then I will, you know, be validated by my colleagues or whatnot, that whole people-pleasing thing. So we're, you know, attaching fulfillment and happiness to achievement, but then when we don't achieve, then it's that, again, that egoic sense of failure and a double whammy on our sense of self-worth, because now we've failed, and why can someone else, you know, have a successful business where I am struggling, or why can someone else have this wonderful relationship and I can't seem to find anybody that doesn't need fixing? We start to confuse who we are and our worthiness with that level of achievement. And I know society tells us that if we're busy, therefore we're productive, therefore we're successful. But you can be really busy grappling at a lot of things and not feel fulfilled or successful, nor do you often feel like you're all that productive or purposeful in your actions. So we really have to step back from those goals and say, where are we writing these goals from? Are they coming from a place of what I think looks good and what I should be doing? Or are they coming from a place of how can I experience life and share what I have to offer to the world? And I think in order to understand whether or not, or assess whether or not our goals take us farther away from our spiritual nature, we kind of have to know, what does it mean to be a spiritual being? What does that really mean? And I think that it means that we live life from a soul-based perspective versus our egoic perception of self. And you can always kind of sense when your ego is driving your bus, when you're like really concerned about what it is you're doing. There's a fear of failure. Is this safe? What will this look like? Will this prevent disappointment in any way? When we set a goal or have a resolution, and it's really about how we look, our safety, being seen in a certain way by others, this is not really our soul speaking. So we're not acting from a place of our divinity, of our soul self, when we're attached to these outside perceptions. You know, our soul doesn't care about that. Our soul knows that we are eternal beings no matter what. Even if our body disintegrates, we're still eternal beings. Our soul knows that we have something important to give to the world, a special, gift, service to do. Our soul knows this and doesn't care what other people think. The second you're doing something that concerns yourself with what other people think, it's not coming from that place of spirituality. And most people are actually creating their goals from the ego. I want a bigger house, a nicer car. Ooh, if I have a nicer car, then, people are going to perceive me of, wealth and status and success. Does your soul care about a car? No, not really. I mean, it wants you to get to places and experience life, but it couldn't give two hoots what, kind of car it is or what color it is, what it looks like, because the soul knows that life and existence is not about that. Okay? So your soul basically is just full of inspired ideas and wants you to create and experiment with it all. So here's, another interesting question on that. If this is the case, what does goal setting look like at soul level? Does it need SMART goals? I hate SMART goals. They just don't work for me, measurable. I spent time making SMART goals. I had to do that for my master's program, and it never worked for me. I didn't really care. I would just put down whatever, and I never really checked, the boxes. Is this measurable? Then I never really did it. And I don't think that the soul really cares about that. Does the soul care if it's super measurable? I mean, I don't know. I guess it depends on how you're created, how you're designed. I don't know. It's a good question. like Buddhist Stoicism, a lot of these ancient philosophies. Again, teach us that desire is the root of suffering. And when we set goals, it's because we want something, right? We want a better job. We want a nicer house. We want improved health. And so does goal setting then set us up for suffering because it's always about desire? And I think yes, if we're doing it for the wrong reasons. And here's another thing in these ancient philosophies. They say, you know, being attached to an outcome is dangerous. And I think this is where we tend to attach our worth to things is the outcome. It's like, was it successful or was I a failure? And oh my gosh, I was a failure. But what if failure was actually the successful outcome of your experiment? I don't think at soul level there is such a thing as success and failure. I think everything is a success because as a soul, we're here, we incarnate into this human condition to play, to experience new things, to express ourselves. And sometimes we grow, a lot of times we grow from figuring out what doesn't work. And if you look at kids, like little small children playing, and they're building something and they can't seem to build it and it falls down or something, you know, they laugh and they're having a good time, even if whatever it is they're trying to build doesn't work, because they're so connected to their soul, their essence, that they realize that what would seem as failure to an adult, I built this building and it crumbled to the ground, what we would see as failure, the children and in our soul sees it as play. Like, oh, it didn't work out. Well, isn't that awesome? That's kind of cool. Why didn't it work out? I'm so curious about that. You know, there's a different, I guess, perspective of looking at it from that place of it doesn't matter what the outcome is. What did you learn from it? And again, as I was doing my Google research, I came across this article on the newminimalism.com website. And the title was like, Do Buddhists Set Goals? And the author said that, is it a he? I don't know whether it's a he or she, but this person verified that Buddhist teachings do not necessarily disapprove of goal setting. You know, there's goals within a Buddhist practice to awaken, to achieve enlightenment, to, you know, not attach yourself to outcome, to relieve suffering. But they do not see goals as end goals. They see these goals as a framework for daily practice. And I thought that was really cool. So instead of, you know, these are my resolutions, how can I bring this into a daily practice? And I think that's what our soul desires, is to actually live every day as if we are those goals, like we've actually achieved them. So if the goal is to lose weight, how can you express yourself today and what can you do as if that's already existed for you? There is no sense of time, soul level. That's really like a human ego creation so that we can track and measure. There isn't a sense of time. So even at soul level, if we're trying to create a goal, it doesn't really understand like the whole future perspective. It's like, oh, well, what are we doing now? So when we make, I guess this goes back to the whole lifestyle thing, when we are living our life on a daily basis and making our goals a daily practice, we're going to get there, you know, no matter what, because it's just part of our lifestyle. It's how we live. And I see that like in myself too. I guess with my health being dairy, gluten, and sugar-free, I've been eating that way for like 7 years. And originally my goal was to not feel like crap, because I did that in order to feel better. I was experiencing some major health problems. So I just, instead of making those a goal, I just said, you know what, I'm going to live from a place of, I am just dairy, gluten, and sugar free. It doesn't work for me. It doesn't work for my body. And so every day, that was just my lifestyle. That was my framework, my foundation. It was never, oh, in 3 months, I'm going to experience X, Y, Z because I did this. So that's what I think this is really talking about, is making it your daily practice. And if you value it, then you're going to do it daily. Okay, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about what is the solution? How do we start to plan and maybe do intention setting, goal setting that's going to help connect us to our divine nature? I'll be back in a few.
Shift your life into overdrive and stop wasting your time? If so, then I want to invite you right now to the Body Regeneration Online Academy with me, Tracy Alves. In a world filled with so much information, you can get overloaded and confused, left feeling like you've tried everything and still no results. If this is you, then this platform is for you to help you step into your power, your intuition, and gain clarity. You will learn simple tools that you can use as you walk down the street. And I will teach you how to grow a stronger connection to the God consciousness. Imagine having me as your coach, shifting you, uplifting you, empowering you every week, and most of all, helping you stay connected so you can navigate your life journey with ease and grace. Nothing will be able to get in your way, but you will have a community filled with souls just like you to pick you up when you fall down and support you on your wins. No one can go this journey alone. If you are ready for your live activation, check me out at TracyLClark.com and join the TLC Body Regeneration Online Academy now.
Life can be demanding, but sometimes our wheels are spinning and we're too focused on making them turn to notice we're stuck in the mud. Tune into The Pause with me, Ellen Wyoming Deloy, every second and fourth Tuesday at 9 a.m. Pacific on Transformation Talk Radio. Learn how to stop, reflect, and start moving forward with intention. And if you're really looking to jumpstart your personal development, schedule a free coaching consultation with me at ellenwyomingdeloy.com.
Well, some of us are outwardly successful, but inwardly feel unhappy and living a life lacking in purpose and meaning. It just doesn't feel good. Well, The Necktie and the Jaguar by Carl Greer can help you discover what's important to you and how to go for it. For more information or purchase the book, go to TransformationTalkRadio.com or CarlGreer.com.
Want to ignite your best life full of joy, passion, and purpose? Then join me, Stephanie James, for The Spark, Wednesday nights, 6 o'clock Pacific Time, 9 o'clock Eastern, on TransformationTalkRadio.com, and learn how together we can illuminate the world. Learn more on StephanieJames.world. The best is yet to come.
Tune into Hungry for Answers every first and third Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com with me, Robin Clare. I am a recovery coach, professional, and best-selling author, bringing you eye-opening conversations about addiction and groundbreaking tools for recovery. To learn about me and my offerings, visit Clarity.com. That's Claire, Clare-ity.com.
Hello and welcome back to Coffee with the Universe. Today we're talking about goals, resolutions, intentions, setting them. Is this actually supporting our spiritual growth, or is it holding us back? We've already talked a little bit about where goal setting can go wrong and what does it mean to be a spiritual being. So I want to talk about what is the solution to this. And I caught myself like laughing as I'm thinking about like all of these things that we preoccupy ourselves with. And I think, I used to in my morning routine spend a lot of time looking at my goals, and because I thought I should, because, you know, you read these productivity articles and they're like, oh, if you look at your goals every morning, you know, you're going to actually do things to accomplish them. I used to spend a lot of time reviewing my goals, and then in planners, they give you like these habit trackers where you can list like 12 things. What are you going to track? Oh, I did my yoga today. I drank 8 glasses of water. And I realized that this was just like one giant distraction time suck for me. I was wasting 30 minutes in the morning reviewing this and looking at my habits versus actually just doing my divinity. And I think that there are some things in the mornings that really help my spiritual growth, like, you know, doing some reading, stretching my body, meditation, and, you know, maybe just kind of looking at what is my general focus for the day. How am I going to create a little bit of a lifestyle for myself? What are negotiables, non-negotiables? Those were the things that were helping me. But this whole idea of really being focused on the goals and tracking things and measuring and, you know, checking the boxes, it was wasting my time. And I would have this anxiety because I was doing it, because I really wasn't out there doing things, doing what I was, I guess, created to do. And when we think about like just a half hour, it's like, oh, it's only like 20, 30 minutes in the morning. That adds up. It adds up after a while. And it left me feeling like I wasn't really accomplishing anything, if that makes sense. But, all right, so what is the solution here? All right, so the first thing, which I talked about, is you really need to know yourself. You need to know what is my soul level strengths. What, you know, how do I best serve? How do I best operate in the world? And I'm not talking about things that you learned, because we have learned strengths and abilities. I'm talking about the stuff that just flows naturally for you. Like, I'm a teacher, and I can teach. I can come up with words. I can write content. And people are like, oh, my God, it takes me, like, 2 days to write, you know, 2 paragraphs. And I'm like, no, I can spit that out in, like, 30 seconds transcribing on my phone. I know that this is just who I am. I'm meant to teach. I'm meant to share. I'm meant to talk. I'm meant to, you know, be opinionated about things. That's just how I'm designed. And I think we need to know this, really know this about ourselves. And there's so many little intricacies of who we are at soul level. So when I do readings for people, you know, we talked a little bit about process versus outcome, but, you know, are you better at reacting to things, or are you better at instigating things? And there's all these little nuances about how we view achievement and how we grow and evolve, that if you don't know yourself, you are very likely to get caught in that trap of what I talked about earlier, where we go wrong, where we, you know, do what we think we should do, or what looks good, or what other people want from us. So you really need to know yourself at soul level, what comes natural, because if you're doing what comes naturally to you, I don't know that you really need to set goals. You're just doing your thing. It's like being in flow. Have you ever been like working and you're just really immersed in it, enjoying it, in whatever task it is? And by work, it doesn't have to be work. It could be a hobby, but you're just so immersed. But then you look at the clock and like 3 hours have gone by and you're like, oh my God, did you have to set a goal to do that? No. That just, you know, is something that you do naturally, and you become so immersed in the present and the now that, you know, whatever you're creating it. That is divinity. That is spiritual growth. That is doing our jobs, I guess, at soul level. We don't have to set goals in order to do that. So know yourself, know where you are in flow, and then create a lifestyle where you're doing those things every single day, regardless of that outcome. You know, and this also takes listening to yourself, which is tough because we have our loud self in our head that chatters away constantly. And then we have our soul self, which is that intuitive voice, that quiet voice within. That quiet voice is usually trying to speak to us, to tell us, like, yes, go this way, or no, don't go that way. But we tend to not listen. I think that part of the solution here is to start to listen to that voice, because that voice is going to give us bouts of inspiration that bubble up that we may not even be thinking about. For example, if we are determined to, you know, set some kind of career goal, and we have it in our mind that we're going to take the next step on the corporate ladder because that's just what is next, we are shutting ourselves off to other possibilities because we're focused on that. We have this narrow frame of reference, and if we're only listening to what's in our head, we're going to drive after that. But what if that intuitive voice within is telling you, you know what, that next step, that's really not for you. You know, you've always wanted to take up, you know, arts or writing or extreme sports as a career. Now is the time to explore that. So we hold ourselves back from really being in our divinity by being narrow-minded and focused because we aren't listening to that voice within. Now, is that sometimes scary to give up, like maybe a corporate space to go take people on extreme skydiving excursions? Probably yes. It is scary when we're doing something different, but that's part of our spiritual growth, is to get out of that comfort zone and not worry about safety. This is where the ego then comes into play. Oh my gosh, you know, this is scary. You could fail. You may not have as much money. Now we're being prevented and stopped from the ego's place of fear. That's not really our soul in operation. Our soul knows that if we listen and follow, we're going to be okay no matter what. So this is like the fine line here between where am I creating and setting these goals from an egoic perspective versus where am I following my soul? Because the goal could be, you know what, I'm listening to that voice within, and I'm going to go, you know, create my little skydiving venture. I'm going to go do that. That could be a goal because that's where your soul is leading you. But it doesn't necessarily make you write out a SMART goal and talk about how many different ways it's measurable. Now, if you like to geek out on that stuff, fine, you know, that's great. But it doesn't need that in order for it to play, in order for it to experience life. So if we look at goals maybe as an experiment, it might take the pressure off of, like, we must achieve it. It might take that off the table because, again, we're talking about experiment. If we reframe failure and success and just say, you know what, everything that we're doing is going to be a success because it's going to help us, you know, it's going to help me weed out what I like, what I don't like, what feels congruent, what isn't congruent. So I'm okay with that. That's helpful. That's helpful. We can, you know, again, we're getting closer to our spiritual nature because it doesn't really care about success anyway. So it's really, it's a moot point. We can detach from our likes and dislikes. This goes back to the root of suffering. Our system of likes and dislikes comes from ego, and it's like projected on things around us, things on we haven't even experimented with. So for example, like, well, I don't like broccoli, and asparagus is also green, therefore I don't like broccoli or asparagus. You know what? As a matter of fact, I don't like any green vegetables. That has shut us off, and I know that that's like not necessarily goal setting, but a lot of times we set goals based on our likes and dislikes. I don't like the way I look, therefore I'm going to set the goal to lose 30 pounds. Well, that's not a driving, you know, reason. Well, I guess it is. Some people are very vain, I guess, and that really is how they look is a driving factor. I guess that's why plastic surgery is like a $1 billion industry because people, you know, are driven by that. But if you're listening to this, you are most likely into spiritual growth. You know that that's not who you are and like super important in life. But you get the point. You know, when we start to worry about what we like and don't like and we're creating goals around that, that's not, you know, taking us closer to our divinity. So I guess, you know, my words of wisdom is think of creating a lifestyle with health. What is, especially with health, like what is important to you? What do you value? What can you do every day that's going to help you feel that way that you want to feel, joyous? And, you know, we could just access our prana, our energy, and feel joy. So what can we do to really tap into that and not worry about, you know, setting goals as a matter of measure of success or accomplishment or how other people see me? All right, so play with this a little bit, and maybe just taking a look at your goals and doing a little evaluation there. Hey, you know, are these really my goals? Am I getting caught up? Are they goals, you know, from a place of egoic perspective where it's out of fear or to keep me safe? How can I start to listen to that soul voice within? How can I jump on those intuitive nudges? You know, how can I listen to my inner voice more so that I'm less likely to start to grasp at outcomes that are unimportant to me or that, you know, just aren't even in the direction that I really want to go? Okay, so we're coming up at the end of the show. Thanks for listening. And I will see you next time here on Coffee with the Universe every third Tuesday of the month at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Transformation Talk Radio. Thank you for joining me for Coffee with the Universe. Make sure to tune in next time as I continue to share tips and tricks to help you stop waking up anxious, uninspired, and energetically drained in the morning and feel calm, connected to your higher self, and confident instead. If you would like more information on my morning magic course, please visit www.speakingmagic.com.